Well, good morning to Wake Up every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on WICC 600 a.m. and 95.9 FM. Thanks to Connoisseur Media and Alan Lamberti, the man in the booth today, helping get through this show, which is a dynamite show. We have one of Bridgeport's very own, somebody who went away and made it big. But I'd like to think he was pretty big since I've known him. He is about, 6 foot five, Mark?
6'3" and chiseled, says the Connecticut Post.
And he was a star, along with my son, at Central High School. Went on to play for the Fordham Rams and took his education and went to New York to do well, to do good, and he did very, very well. So we're really glad to welcome you this morning here, Mark, to Wake Up on WRC.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Mark, you know, I've known you since you were born. That means I'm old. And I have to say I'm very proud to have you on my show because I've seen you not only develop into a mature man and a husband and a father, but also somebody who gives back constantly to our community. And for those of you who don't know, Mark Smith's family, the Smith Family Foundation, is a supporter of the Cardinal Sheehan Center, where he and his sisters and brother went as kids, paying it back to those people who are less fortunate than us. And that will be a theme of our show, the fortunate and the less fortunate, as we talk about our American economy. But Mark's also an advisor at Wells Fargo, where he's a portfolio manager. He tells people what the economy is going to do, and he tells them what he thinks they should do with their money in order to get through it. But before I stop talking about Mark, let me just also say, kids in Bridgeport, if you go to any of the sports events right after this show, we have Dave Rudin talking sports. He can tell you that the kids in Bridgeport don't have the equipment, don't have the uniforms, don't have the opportunities that their mostly white brothers and sisters in the suburbs have. And it's a discriminatory thing, but Mark has done an awful lot to level the playing field by helping to sponsor the Field of Dreams in Bridgeport. And between the Cardinal Sheehan Center, the Field of Dreams, and Safe Horizons, which, like the Center for Family Justice in Bridgeport, works with families who are victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. So we not only have a man here who can tell you how to navigate the terrible waters of our economy and keep your money safe, but we also have somebody who cares about our community deeply. So, again, I'm very happy to welcome you, Mark. I know it's a long introduction, but you're worthy of it in every shape and form.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thanks so much. I'm happy to give back.
Well, you know, you learned a lot on the gridiron, and you put those skills to work at Wells Fargo. Recently, I had a chance to watch you on CNBC and Fox Business and also on FinTech, where you talked about a myriad of issues. I think our listeners will be very, very excited to hear about your take on the economy. And let's just start right off the bat with the big story of the week. DeepSeek comes out with supposedly a really cheap way to develop AI and sets the markets a tumble. Can you tell us what you know about this and what you think it means to the American economy and to, you know, Joe taxpayer and Josephine citizen?
Yeah, well, listen, artificial intelligence has been the soup du jour for the last 3 years and for the financial markets. It's what's really propelling the S&P 500 to unprecedented levels. And artificial intelligence right now is not like Terminator 2, although people extrapolate that out like 100 years in the future, what could happen. But right now, for everyday citizens, artificial intelligence is really going to be there to do everything that we can do right now faster. So if you are a research analyst, this thing's going to be able to do all your work in 5 seconds that it would have taken you 5 hours to do. What's happening is NVIDIA, which is a company who's right now more valuable than Apple up until recently, makes all the semiconductors, the microchips that go into all these different supercomputers that allow you to have artificial intelligence, right? It's a U.S. company, and NVIDIA is now the most valuable company in the world. And what happened is over the weekend, you had a company out of China that said, wait a minute, we can do what that company can do without the super cool microchips. And so That did a tremendous amount of harm to all the companies that have built their wealth over the last, you know, 3-4 years, because of the fact that you don't need the chips that propel these companies to the highest levels that we've seen of companies in American history. And so it completely changed the paradigm of what you would think about when you think about artificial intelligence and how you get there.
So, Mark, I think everybody's...
Hopefully that answers your question.
Well, everybody's a little concerned about this tumble. All the AI, you know, investors had to do was snap their fingers and billions would roll in to eager investors. And now all of a sudden somebody could do it cheaper. What's it going to mean to municipal bonds? What's it going to mean to treasury bills? What's it going to mean to the financial markets if the trend continues and the stock market keeps going down in those areas?
Well, listen, the stock market's at all-time highs, relatively, right? So we're maybe 2 or 3% away from all-time highs. So I want to just put things in perspective. Nothing's really tanked yet.
Right.
All the companies that you know about in the S&P 500, the Home Depots, the ExxonMobils, the Microsofts, the Metas, the Johnson & Johnsons, et cetera, these companies will, I think, be enhanced because of artificial intelligence, not because of it. Not because it exists, they'll do poorly. So if you own these companies, I think you'll do well because artificial intelligence is going to help these companies become more profitable. And that's what companies' main job is to do, to make the stock price go up. That's what they've got to do. That's their mandate. And so if you own these companies, even though artificial intelligence exists, you can make money in this environment if you are a shareholder of the companies that will benefit from AI.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but maybe we come back. You could give some of our listeners an idea of what types of industries to invest in the future. We'll be right back after this. We're back here this morning on Wake Up with our special guest, Mark Smith, a homegrown celebrity. You can see him on FinTech, Fox Business, CNBC, as he gives his clients, he's a portfolio manager, as he gives his clients at Wells Fargo Advisors advice on what to invest in. We just finished up talking about AI, Mark, and we can see the tremendous benefits, some of the downfalls about AI, but what are the types of industries? Are places like, you know, utilities going to be more profitable because of AI, or Verizon, are they going to be more profitable because of AI, or maybe even the healthcare industry, are they going to be more profitable because of AI?
To make it really easy for the listener, every single sector will become more profitable because of AI for a number of reasons. Number one, they're going to become more efficient. So if you own a gas station, instead of waiting for someone at the gas station to tell you how many gallons are being sold of your product, it'll report directly to the distributor. The truck will be on its way replacing the gas before anyone even told you anything. So it's going to make. So that's a small example of what's going to happen in every sector. Every sector is going to become more efficient, and you'll probably need in some degree in some places less people, which is again is not good for society, but better for the really good for the company if they have lower overhead, right? So AI should do that for every single company and every single sector. There's nowhere that's really going to be not affected, except for, and there are some exceptions, if you are any type of home improvement or you are a builder, a constructor, there is no robot right now who can build a building, fix a roof, unclog a toilet, or replace a sink. No AI can do that. So I'm telling all my young people to go into trades because of what's going on with this AI thing. I think the folks that have gone to college and try to do things like analyst jobs and research roles, those jobs I think are going to be outsourced because this AI is just going to be able to do it so much faster than a human, right? And well, so it wouldn't make really sense to have so many analysts and researchers.
I can't say enough how much I appreciate that. As you know, I work for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, who's one of the sponsors here at WICC, as well as the National Electrical Contractors Association. We've been trying to get kids for years to look at the trades. Just a quick little advertisement. The licensed trades in particular are very high paying, and you'll have health care for your life, and you'll have retirement for your life, and you won't pay for your college education. We call ourselves the other four-year degree, and it's free. So people can go to, in the local area, they can go to the IBEW Local 488 website, IBEWLocal488.org. And check out how to become an apprentice and get into the middle class. And as Mark Smith here says from Wells Fargo, he's making a lot of money. but he is also telling you, be smart, kids. Yeah, you can't all be like Mark Smith. Some of us have to work for a living.
Well, listen, I mean, I know plumbers and electricians that are making seven figures a year, Bill. I mean, this is not a joke. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all working so that we can have fun. Everybody's working for the weekend, right? Everyone wants to have fun and use their money and take care of their family. And so who cares how you get it done as long as you do it? So, you know, listen, I would tell any young person right now to strongly consider looking at all these different jobs where you can use your hands and really help impact the community and build a nice life for yourself. Because I think AI is going to change everything in the next 20 years. And so to not know, to act like everything's going to stay the same, I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice.
Well, while we're talking about income, let's talk about, I know I've heard you speak eloquently about the wealth gap between Black America and White America, but the gap between the 0.1%, the richest Americans, and everybody else. So 0.1% is not the 99.9% that includes everybody you know. It includes the 0.1% of people that you don't know. They're the richest people on Earth, and the amazing thing is how the wealth gap has grown. I'm looking at a chart here. All these numbers are based on Federal Reserve numbers. They're not hocus-pocus socialist numbers. These are real hard-and-fact numbers from the Federal Reserve. The gap in 1990 to the gap now, it looks as though it's gotten about 8 to 10 times worse. And, you know, we're going to have a Congress talk about whether to extend the Trump-era tax cuts, which will mean that the wealthiest people continue to get a huge break on their taxes and the marginal rates will not go up. The marginal rates are the amounts on over $500,000 of income, which most people I know don't have. But, Mark, how do we work on, as a society, in a democracy, the effects of an oligarchy where the top 0.1% are owning the means of communication, owning most of the means of production, owning most of the wealth, and thereby just making decisions that the rest of us could never even think of, like having their own space program, for example. What do we do about that? You work for some of the richest people in the country. What do they think about it? You know, just an addition to that is when the progressive came on the scene in the early 1900s, Teddy Roosevelt and the others, the wealthy people were for the progressive income tax because they needed to redistribute income to create customers. Is that still a feeling among the super rich that you know?
Well, listen, I think, number one, everyone is there to take care of themselves and their family. So if you hear anyone tell you something different, they probably need to go to work in the Vatican or something like that, because most people want to just take care of themselves and their family that I know, or my clients.
Right.
And so, you know, it's up to politicians and government really to do that job, Bill. And that's why I respect what you've done with your career and why one day maybe I'll run, is because it's really the government's job to care about the people at large. Because these wealthy people, they're just trying to take care of their family. They're trying to leave an inheritance to their grandkids. I mean, they're just like, you know, and they have the means to do it. But, you know, so that's what I would say. And so I think this country, being a history major at Fordham, you know, I've studied this, American history, is that this country's always really been run by the super elite. I mean, going back to the robber baron days, where you had opulence to a degree we've never seen in this country. Remember the Great Gatsby movie? I mean, and that always existed, where you had a few folks, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, that have controlled broad swaths of the economy. So I don't think anything has really changed from that point. But I would say one thing is that all these people that you just mentioned who are super wealthy in America, they made their money in their lifetime, which is, I think, is the only place on this planet where you could be a hardworking guy coming from Bridgeport, Connecticut, and become a success in one lifetime without the help of some person tapping you on the shoulder from Vladimir Putin's clan and saying, okay, now you are you're a made man. No one made me, right? I had to, like, you know, get up every
cold
single day,
call out of the phone book
to get to where I'm at. Yeah, cold call out of a phone book when they had phone books. You know, and you just did it the hard way through grit. So this country, I think, is great because of that. And Bill, your son Pete, another great example of just grit and determination. Nobody gave him a thing. Right? You're in politics. He pursued music and law. So everything he's accomplished has been through grit. I think this country is great because of that still. And so what I think I would tell the young people out there that might be listening or even hear about this is that, you know, you can do and what you're seeing all these wealthy people are doing in your lifetime if you have grit, determination, and you're not short-sighted. And so a lot of the wealthy people I know are not short-sighted. They plan for the future. They invest for something that may not pay off for 10 years. And that's a different thinking, right? They have the luxury of thinking like that because they do have more money. But so I would say that that's the commonality I see with the ultra wealthy.
Well, I'll push back on you a little bit, Mark, because they now own all the means of our communication. That didn't exist with the robber barons. There were 6,000 or 8,000 newspapers in the United States. When Ronald Reagan eliminated the fairness doctrine and then allowed corporations and wealthy people to buy up the means of communication, it used to be restricted by the Federal Communications Commission, and you couldn't own large communication companies all under one umbrella. It had to be diverse, so there was competition. We now have the information augmented and you know, using algorithms sanitized for our own benefit, and no one gets the same information because the super wealthy control those means of communication, and they make money off of creating algorithms and keeping us separated rather than to, you know, have a community dialogue like we used to have with the media as it was. And the additional thing to that is, since Ronald Reagan, with the elimination of the top tax brackets, that's when we've seen this vast accumulation of wealth to the point where it's hard for the average Joe and Josephine to even understand what is $500 billion, what's going to be the first trillionaire. I remember there was a proportionality example given to us in school that 1 million grains of sand fit in a bathtub, 1 billion cover your football field 30 inches deep. I think I have it wrong. 1 million can fit in a glass, 1 billion can fit in a bathtub, and 1 trillion cover a football field a foot deep with sand. So we can't even comprehend this vast accumulation of wealth and power. And the thing that I'm sort of trying to get at is, it was the wealthy, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, that promoted progressive income taxes. Are there any now? I mean, Bloomberg, perhaps, or Tom Steyer. But what about the wealthy class of people that you see? Do they understand history like you do?
You know, listen, I think that everyone's different, right? I think there are some folks that talk about that stuff, this stuff, and watch the news and BBC and are educated. But I would definitely say that, again, the progressive tax and all that, people do not want to be taxed. Not someone making 50 grand, not someone making 5 million. And especially when there's so many different opinions of what people should be doing with their tax dollars. And what's so interesting is that, you know, I just learned this recently, is that, you know, the federal tax came from a time where we were at war during World War II and was never taken off. And so, you know, it's really interesting just to see, like, you know, listen, I think personally that states should have a lot of power because that's where we live, right? I spend most of my time in Connecticut. So do you, Bill? I mean, we're not traveling all over the country. And the governors of these states, I think, should have a little bit more autonomy to make their citizens' lives better. And if there's some way where we could tax individuals more on a state level and lower the amount that we give to the federal government, I'm all for it, because I'm personally experiencing in Connecticut a governor who's doing a great job, managed the pandemic well, who's got us fiscally responsible, who gets it. And I think he gets both sides of the coins. He gets along with Republicans and Democrats to a certain extent. So guy lives in one of the wealthiest enclaves in the country. But he is, like you said, a progressive. And so I think there's room for both, Bill. And but I do think that it behooves government to really take control, because $27 trillion in debt is a big deal.
Oh,
the
yeah.
average American's responsibility is not to fix that problem. It is politicians rolling up their sleeves, getting out a pen and paper and figuring out, listen, what do we have to cut in order to get our fiscal house in order? And it's going to be difficult. I'm someone who works with folks that are wealthy and are going bankrupt, and it's just 5 years away. They don't know it. They're happy as hell at ham, spending $1 million a month on this and that. But I'm telling you, it's going to happen, because, and I explain this to them, and they literally put their hands over their eyes and ears and continue to spending. That is a microcosm of what's happening in America. And we need to wake up and say, listen, we meant well when we gave all these entitlements. We just can't afford it, or we'll bankrupt the nation. Well, and we need to be deadly serious that that's what can happen.
I'm very proud to have you on the show today, Mark, and hear these really interesting points of view. We're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And we're back on Wake Up with your host, myself, Bill Finch, and our special guest, Bridgeport's own, a highly successful financial advisor out of the New York City markets, Mark Smith. What position did you play? Defensive end, Mark, for Central High School?
I played Iron Man, Bill. I played offensive tackle and defensive end. I didn't leave the field unless it was special teams.
And you even, with Peter, my son, went on with took your shoulder pads off and played the sousaphone at halftime with the band. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he played the sousaphone. I played the trombone. So,
yeah.
And then we had Josh Lugo, who played saxophone. There were three guys all starting that played in the marching band at halftime.
That was pretty cool.
Well, we started getting good. Coach Catalina stopped that right away, so we had to make a decision.
Yeah. Well, you were, and Peter and Josh and others were the beginning of a dynasty under Coach Catalina that went from the last to best at Bridgeport Central, sort of culminating with the Akeem Wright, Chris Finch era, where they played for an FCAC championship. So, unfortunately, the program was going downhill from there. But let's talk about opportunity and affordability and sustainability, the things we care about. Opportunity, Mark, diversity, inclusion is something that for the last over a decade, corporations and government have been working very hard at. The current administration has eliminated all DEI within the federal government. Seems short-sighted to me. You and I both know people who've gotten a little bit of a leg up into doors where they wouldn't have gotten because they went to Central or they were black or Puerto Rican. Tell me how DEI affects the finance industry and what you see as its overall benefit.
Yeah, so basically DEI, the finance industry, looks at it as a necessity because all our clients are diverse. And if you look at the numbers, which all these banks do, I'm sure you all know that, we look at numbers all day, is that we are going to be a majority-minority country the next 20 years. So which means that you're going to have Latin folks, Asians, African-Americans be the majority of the country. You cannot
like Bridgeport.
Have a successful company. Yeah,
just,
go ahead.
Just like Bridgeport.
Exactly.
America's going to be like Bridgeport. We love it.
Exactly. So, you know, that's what's going to happen. The numbers dictate that.
The food's going to get a lot better.
The music, hopefully, too, and the dancing.
Yes.
And hopefully, you know, I think that what's going to happen is that these companies are going to continue to have these DEI, I wouldn't say it's a mandate, but I would say that the importance that these CEOs put on DEI is because of that fact and focus. Yeah.
Well,
because of that fact.
It seems like the corporations have done a great service to the United States, even when the government goes in completely different directions. With the change of administration, corporations are still investing in renewable energy. They're still investing in the jobs that my members do with the infrastructure work that's going on, and still investing in diversity and inclusion. So I'm happy that you said that, Mark, because it seems to me that the military and the corporations are oftentimes the stabilizing factor in America.
Yeah, I agree. And
So let me ask you. I want to ask you about another set of another abbreviation. We talked about DEI, name, image, and likeness. That's what NIL stands for. This is the bane of college coaches in all sports these days because there's a portal. Kids make a lot of money. They go in the portal and they become extraordinarily powerful. Not necessarily the best managers of their largesse. And you have come out, I know, I've heard you talk about how some of this money should be put aside for these athletes because they haven't been very good at investing it, and have it maybe be conditional upon graduation or conditional upon not transferring between three schools or conditional upon mandatory financial training, something along those lines. It seems like we've got a big problem with NIL, and then you combine that with sports gaming. I just know that you're a big sports fan. Tell me, as an investor and a huge sports fan, what are we going to do with NIL?
Well, listen, you know, NIL is brand new, and I think it's going to evolve like everything else. And I think the government probably has to get involved to some degree because it's a national in scope. And so you really do need the federal government to come in and kind of clean this all up, just like they did with Wall Street. Before all the blue sky laws and regulations like Dodd-Frank, Patriot Act, it's the Wild Wild West on Wall Street. Right now it's the Wild Wild West in college sports. And so the government's going to have to come in and create somewhat of an SEC for sports, where there's someone that reports directly to the president, and their mandate is to make sports fair and equal for as many folks as possible, as far as fair could go. But just to be clear, NIL right now, name, images, and likeness, is not really happening to most athletes. What's happening is their collectives. And so a school like Fordham University, we are asked our wealthy alum to put into this huge pot, collection plate, and divvy it out to the players that the coach thinks that they would like to recruit. That wasn't really the intention at all. It was mostly for athletes to go out and get sponsorships from like companies like Nike and Gatorade, et cetera, Under Armour. But now it's become this thing where, you know, it's just an arms race between the wealthy alum who could put as much money in a pot, and then the bidding war begins with the best players. And so whatever school alumni base wants to concentrate on any specific, you know, 4-year period, they could possibably win a bowl game. But that's what's happening right now. It's unfortunate.
You know, as the sports fan that you are and I am, we love the sort of authenticity of college sports and high school sports, where, you know, student athletes have to compete against each other on a level playing field. I just don't get the sense that we're going to have that much longer.
It'll be a level playing field within a certain difference. The SEC, obviously, the Atlantic 10, et cetera. They'll all compete because they have huge alumni base and they have, 100,000 plus people graduate, go through their schools every year. So they'll be able to compete.
And the rest of us will be sort of left hanging,
and the
right?
The rest of us will be.
We got to take a short break. We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Wake Up with your host, myself, Bill Finch, and my special guest, a homegrown hero by the name of Mark C. Smith. Mark is a bigwig down on Wall Street now. He works for Wells Fargo Investors as a portfolio manager, managing some very, very impressive people's personal wealth. We talked about the wealth gap in the United States. We've talked about name, image, and likeness. We talked about artificial intelligence. And now we're going to talk about something very close to home and important to Mark and his family. His family, as you heard me earlier mentioned in the show, that they have the Smith Family Foundation, one of the benefactors of the Cardinal Sheehan Center. But Mark, our school system in Bridgeport has been used as a political whipsaw for all kinds of special interests. I know when I was mayor, we tried to have, we did have for a short time, for about 2 years, an appointed school board with no politics, just focusing on test scores and children's learning. At the time, we were able to balance the budget. We were able to get every kid a laptop, all new textbooks, and a teacher's raise. So things were going onward and upward, and you say, why change? Well, the state Supreme Court saw fit to throw out that on a technicality of how the training of the failing school board was done. How arcane their ruling was, it's unbelievable, but now we're back in the same mess. Board meetings take hours and hours, although I talked with one board member last night. She said, with the new state-appointed superintendent, the meeting only lasted about an hour. Normally, these things drag on forever and don't accomplish anything. Mark, it must pain you to see a once proud system that you graduated from in this kind of condition.
Yeah, listen, I think that, when I went to Central Magnet, Ms. Kakuza, Andrew Carson, who I just spoke to, Bill, last week, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Now, living the good life.
Yeah.
The school, we had Harvard, two Harvard folks that went to graduate from Central, go to Harvard, MIT, Georgetown,
Fordham, UConn,
Amherst, Fordham. I mean, the list goes on. This is the Bridgeport Central that I went to. So, I think it's a far cry from where it was, but I don't think it's one reason. I think that what's happening is, and I'm experiencing this because I volunteer on the Central Football as the head of the football club's alumni association for the Central Football team. is what's happened is there's like a little bit of a brain drain coming from the public school system in Bridgeport. You're having what's happening is the cream of the crop in the public school system in Bridgeport is being picked off by some of the most elite private schools in the country, and they have scholarship money backing them. And when you see these campuses, they rival some of the Ivies.
Oh yeah.
And so you're in a situation where your test scores are being affected by this. The school morale is getting affected by this. The teachers aren't seeing the type of kids like Peter and I that were focused and driven, want to go to school and go to Ivy League schools. They're not just seeing that because they're getting picked off by all these private schools. And I'm not blaming anyone for that. I think that the parents need to do and the kids need to do what's right for them. But that is the situation. And so you are getting, I think, skewed test results because of that fact. It looks like Bridgeport schools are the worst in the country. And I think it's the fact that you've got these elite private schools that are picking off the best and the brightest.
Yeah.
And so what I think personally is that, you know, there should be there was Brown versus Board of Education. I don't really see it.
A year before I was born.
I don't really see it in this state, unfortunately. There's a lot of segregation happening. You've got all the Black and Latino people in a few cities in this state, and everybody else is predominantly Caucasian. And so I personally think there should be the Connecticut should take a bold step and try to see if parents want to do this, go to any school in the state you want, and the state will pay for it. The Bridgeport students, because they've been underserved for too long. It's an immediate fix. That's my personal opinion. Give parents choice. If they want to stay in charter in Bridgeport, let them do charter. If they want to double down on public school systems, continue to try to improve that. But I got to tell you, it's a hard road to improve the public school system. There's a lot of different political things happening that are preventing change. And so, the parents and the kids don't care that it's taking this long. They want immediate action.
Well, their kids only get one chance at fifth grade. You know, it's not like the kids are going to stop growing and wait for the parents to fix the schools. Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
The schools need to be fixed now, not 5 years from now. They need to be fixed now. And it's not just in Bridgeport. It's in every major city in America.
You talked about school choice, essentially, between public schools. And certainly that would give people of color a choice to go to a better school. As mayor, you know, one of the reasons why mayors, Democratic mayors especially, are so gung-ho on charter schools is because they don't want to sit in front of a group of Black and Latino parents and say, you know what, because of your zip code, your kid's got to go to a school that isn't going to really succeed for him. You just have to because of where you live. And that's not American, really. That's not for equal opportunity. So charter schools, at least, gave people a local public school to choose from. And I think your idea of expanding that choice to other public schools is a great one. Will the white suburbs agree with that? That's another question.
Like I said, sometimes government needs to step in when people don't want to, because people will give out for their own interests all the time. Government needs to be able, it has to step in. The governor has to take a bold step and do something immediately for these parents in the city who have been under these horrendous conditions for decades. And he has the power right now in Hartford to change that. And I think anything else less is not doing what's right for the parents or the students.
So let's get back to the finances here, Mark.
Immediate change.
Let's get back to the finances, because we want to empower people to help the next generation be better. And you are an expert at having people finance their 529 plan. In Connecticut, we have Chet. Denise Napier started that, Check Chet Out, where you could put money tax-free away and take it out tax-free for your children's education. And now, Mark, I believe that you've helped to expand that so that people can come to Mark Smith at Wells Fargo, and they can invest their money in a 529 plan, and it can be done for grammar school as well as high school and college, correct?
Yeah, 529 plans are super exciting if you've got kids, grandkids, or a kid that you care about. A lot of people think 529 plans are just for people with children. You'd be wrong. A 529 plan is for anyone that wants to support someone who wants to go to school. So if you have a child that wants to go to school, that's of school age, you will be the owner of the 529 plan. The 529 plan, all the contributions, you could give $500 for the year. You can give $5,000. There are maxes, but you could do, I recommend to my clients that they do contributions monthly, whatever they can afford. All that money grows tax-free in this 529 plan. It's invested in the stock market, just so you know.
So let's say, let's talk numbers. Let's say I earned $100,000 and I could put $20,000 or $10,000 aside for my kid to go to a grammar school. My taxable income now is $90,000, correct?
No, your taxable income is still $100,000. This money you're putting in the 529 plan is after tax dollars.
After tax.
So you're putting it's after tax dollars, but it grows tax free.
Okay.
It comes out tax free. And so the point was, say you have saved up $20,000. The kid's 8 years old. You get into a great primary school, and you need to put on a deposit of, say, $3,000. You can go to the 529 plan and get that out to do that if there was something happening in the household where you didn't have the cash. So that's the flexibility of 529 plans has changed tremendously.
That's amazing.
It used to be just for college.
Yeah.
It used to be just for college. Now it's for primary school, high school, grad school.
So, unfortunately, our show is only an hour in length, and we have covered so much territory, Mark. I really appreciate you being on here. How can people reach you if they'd like to talk to you more about 529 plans or other financial investments?
Yeah, you can reach me at just go to Google and do Mark C. Smith at Wells Fargo. I'm also on CNBC, so if you Google Mark C. Smith CNBC, all the videos I've ever done on CNBC or Fox Business will pop up along with my contact information.
When I get my website a little bit more professional here on Wake Up with Bill Finch, I'll make sure we do a link so that people who fall onto my site can also find Mark C. Smith. Mark, it's been my distinct pleasure to have you on this show, to see someone who I knew since they were at Patty Bear Nursery School with smelly diapers and all, grow up to be such an amazing influence on modern society in America today. Thank you for giving back to those who are disadvantaged. I know you'll continue to do so, and I know you'll continue to contribute. We'll have you back again someday to talk again on Wake Up with myself, Bill Finch, on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week here on the radio.